Good evening, and welcome to the Yellow Dogs. So, as probably have told you this many times, but when I say we, Randy and me, we started our journey many years ago with Ram Dass. Funny, funny man, but so insightful and such a gift to us because of the fact that happens to be have a Western mind, so he knows how it works. But he was the one that encouraged us to meditate, and he introduced us to Neem Karola Baba, who is or was his guru from the Hindu tradition. So we got a little taste of that in our journey, and it's very sweet. But Ram Dass said at the time he wrote Grist for the Mill, his practice was to see everything that came his way as manifestation of the Divine Mother. And the Divine Mother is the energy of creation, or Shakti. So he taught us to see everything as the mother. And he also thought Maharaji, his guru, meant us to use every detail of our life for grist for the mill of our spiritual development. And he's so right. So every experience is a mirror reflecting, where are we right now in any given moment in consciousness? And so setting up the mother, you know, we just get this compassionate embrace with the mother. And the layers of old habits and preconceptions and residues of past experiences, well, they can dissolve in the ocean of maternal affection. And we know that. We can relate to that. So it kind of helps us in that way. So I heard Ram Dass say many times in many ways, we have a choice. We can cover the world with the mother or cover the mother with the world. And that has stayed with me for many, many years. So covering the mother with the world, of course, is the world of duality. And it's where a car is a car, a chair is a chair, a lawnmower is a lawnmower, and we are who we are. I am me and you are you. It's a world of separateness. So covering the world with a mother is the flip side of us all being connected, which is in line with right view, the very first of the eightfold path that we'll be studying for weeks. Because right view is aligned with not separateness. Car goes by, I hear it, I see it. We use our six senses to greet life as it arises in any given moment. And so it's the world of non-separateness because we connect to the present moment that we all experience. And when we experience it unconditionally, then there we are. There we are. You don't feel the separateness. So it would always reflect on, we are in the world, but we're not of the world. And he said that Westerners are enthralled with our minds, and we are. And we are often the best object of our lessons for our own teaching. And that's true. This is what we have. Our curriculum is who we are, who we've been conditioned to think we are. So we're just getting to know ourselves in that, under that paradigm of thinking, in a little shift of perspective, because it's quite a process that we probably have not done on our own. So we take this mind and body, and we study strategies or ways to use the mind to go beyond the mind. So our relationship with the mind shifts too. And we begin to see ways to understand states of consciousness. What's this mind doing? And that beyond thought, there's something else. And there is other ways to identify ourselves other than through the mind. So we've heard Buddhist teachings say non-self and how to witness the mind and our attachment to it. Then we slowly but surely reach the truth that we do live in two worlds. So that's kind of stabilizing for me anyway. Otherwise, it just seems so crazy. So we begin to inquire about all aspects of our lives. Who are we? What is this all about? But in truth, though we live in this world, we're not solely of this world, and we get a glimpse of that too. We've learned to live in the world, but we've not yet fully recognized from where we come or who we are. But because we have to, the right effort again, explore beyond the world. And to do that, that's scary. It's like stepping off into the void. It's like diving off a diving board when you're afraid of diving. It's scary. And the Buddhist teachings say to understand the true nature of who we are, both the world and the truth of who we are must be known and embraced. So that's what we're doing. But if we're asking for freedom, then leading the good life is just partway home. So we're home. We're home in the world. And we're home beyond the world. So many of us in this very lifetime have come from tremendous, I'm speaking for myself right now, preoccupation with our neurosis, with our achievements, with our careers, with our melodramas. And so we arrived at a place where we can see clearer now. It happens quite quickly with the right effort. For us to begin to see that and to settle and kind of settle into it. So it seems like we're not as busy being neurotic as the general population. That's easy to say, isn't it? But this is Ram Dass saying it. Because we've begun to take our personalities a little less seriously. So our personalities are there, just like our bodies are, and we do what we have to do to present them to the rest of us. We comb them, we wash them, we clean them up, we dress them, we move them here and there. We've forgotten how to love them. But again, that's part of our teachings and part of our practice. So we're like traveling temples. And so our personalities are another part of what is to be known openly and clearly and honestly. But knowing the truths of the mind and body is only part of it, but a very important part of waking up. So we learn how to be still and meditate. But have you noticed that we also forget? That is a huge, is a huge insight for me, because I thought once I heard it, once or twice, three times, now 100,000 times, that I would remember it. But one does not embody it by just hearing it, because it's experiential. It has to be practiced, because we are of the nature to forget. And nothing's wrong with that. It's important to give ourselves that space. So we learn how to be still and meditate, but we continue riding the waves of our practice. So people say, well, how can you do what you do on a daily basis, like meditate twice a day, for so long? So what happens is it becomes more compelling. The more we open to ourselves, the more we learn about ourselves, the more we become interested in ourselves, not guided by the mind, but guided by the whole body awareness. Something happens. I think it's magical because of the fact that I've seen in my own practice forgetting and then remembering, forgetting and then remembering. And one of the things that we know are these teachings are, I mean, there's just so many of them, so much of them. It's just amazing. But that's the nature of living in a human body. So to stay on the path, we must continually show up at the Sangha. We can go to retreats. We can listen to podcasts. We can hang out with people who are interested in waking up. Some of us chant. A lot of us read. And so that's what I do during the day. Not all day long. But I'm in the world, so I'm participating in the world, and that's easy to get lost in. But if I touch just the truth ever so often, and it doesn't have to be much, it can be like some of the things that I've been taught that I've kept with me for a long time. You can cover the world with a mother or the mother with the world. Or one that's a little deeper and took a long time to understand under the umbrella of waking up, nothing is more important than anything else. So we grab hold of something that's grabbed hold of us in our practice, and we reflect on it. And so I just have a accumulation of those that I find very helpful. And just carrying around, you know, or posting, or do whatever creatively we can do to keep reminding ourselves, because we forget. And so, another one Ram Dass said early on that his guru gave to him is love, serve, and remember. Remember. And somehow his guru knew, or Neem Karola Baba knew, that that's right effort, is how to keep us living in the world, but remembering we're not of the world. And that's difficult, because we're right in the middle of it. So there are ways we keep in touch of who we really are, and we begin to follow the Eightfold Path, which is one of the Four Noble Truths. Noble Truth, they're suffering. Well, you know, we don't have to be too convinced that that's so, even though I can remember I'm not suffering. I really, truly said to myself, and really hung out with that paradigm for a long time, I'm not suffering, look at me. Well, I'm not suffering because I don't know what suffering is, for one thing. And not only that, do I not know what suffering is, I don't know what it's like to be released from the mind and the body. So, you know, that makes sense. So there's suffering, and we begin to wake up to our suffering. And they're not, we suffer every day. We grieve every day. Every time we don't get our way, or every time something doesn't go our way, we suffer. It's grieving not getting our way, and nothing's wrong with that. But that's the truth. The truth of suffering is we are suffering. And I've told you this before, our friend and teacher, I can't think of his name right now, cried, boo-hooed, when he heard that life was full of suffering, because it's out there. Oh, you mean we can talk about the suffering? All the little sufferings, all the big ones, are the ones to anticipate, because we can anticipate losing it all to be great suffering. So it really behooves us to really dive in to life is full of suffering, and that there is a cause of suffering, because that's our plan. We want to see within us, each individual, what we're doing that causing our suffering. And we won't know if we don't know ourselves. So if we're just walking, talking heads, and we don't know how to go within and begin to see the whole process, we're very limited to our knowledge. And that's what this ancient practice does. In getting to know ourselves, there is more love. You think, oh no, yeah, maybe that doesn't happen. Yeah, there is. not only more love for myself, but for others. Why? Because that's who we are, and that's what we're opening up to, our who we really are. And there is an end to suffering. And so we're practicing part of that plan in meditation. But the Buddha said, okay, there's some more things that you might want, some more ways you might want to consider in following this journey of who we really are. And so he gives us the Eightfold Path. And so I know when I first heard it just turned me off. Oh no, here's another, another one of those. Well, of course, it wasn't and isn't. But because, I guess, I'm assuming this, I don't know if this is absolutely true, but the reason it's interpreted as right view, because it's difficult to translate the true meaning from Pali into what the Buddha taught. So there's right view, there's right thought, there's right speech, there's right conduct, there's right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi or concentration. And these aren't there shall or shall not. It's not like the Ten Commandments, but it's like everything else that the Buddha teachings have done. It just points us. Okay, let's look at how we're viewing life, like right view, in great depth to see, how am I viewing myself? How am I viewing my life? How am I viewing? And so that's what we're going to study in depth, is all eight of them. So I'd like to teach a series on all eight of them. So I think it'll be very helpful. I'm pretty excited about it because I just downloaded Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, The Eightfold Path, and he really dives into it. And I don't think I've done an in-depth teaching of this. And you know, when I teach, I have to know it a little bit better than maybe I know it right now. So it gives me the opportunity again to dive into a teaching that I really think the Buddha and everyone else who's involved thinks will be most helpful to us. And then we'll see. Okay, see what the Buddha's saying about right view and see if we can connect with that. And then if we know it, that that's a possibility, then we can begin to see for ourselves. So that's what's so incredible about these Eightfold Path, is that we have to find out for ourselves. Otherwise, they're just words. So we begin. And so with that beginning, again, as I said, we don't want to get trapped in thinking that, oh, I already know. And I'm talking to myself. Oh, I already know about the Eightfold Path. I've heard it from this teacher, this teacher, this teacher. You see what I mean? My attitude. So that attitude of thinking we know hinders. It's a huge hindrance. So we want to renew an openness. An openness as if we've never heard it before. And take it in with all its possibilities. So I look forward to go with you in this direction. So thank you for your attention. And now we'll open it up to you.